In your Bibles, please, to the fourth chapter of the book of Job. Job chapter 4, verse 1. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. Then Eliphaz the Temanite answered and said, "If we essay to commune with thee, wilt thou be grieved? But who can withhold himself from speaking? Behold, thou hast instructed many, and thou hast strengthened the weak hands. Thy words have upholden him that was falling, and thou hast strengthened the feeble knees. But now it is come upon thee, and thou faintest. It toucheth thee, and thou art troubled. Is not this thy fear, thy confidence, thy hope, and the uprightness of thy ways? Remember, I pray thee, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the righteous cut off? Even as I have seen, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same. By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of his nostrils are they consumed. The roaring of the lion and the voice of the fierce lion and the teeth of the young lions are broken. The old lion perisheth for lack of prey, and the stout lion's whelps are scattered abroad. Now a thing was secretly brought to me, and mine ear received a little thereof. In thoughts from the visions of the night, when deep sleep falleth on men, fear came upon me in trembling, which made all my bones to shake. Then a spirit passed before my face, and the hair of my flesh stood up. I stood still, but I could not discern the form thereof. As an image was before mine eyes, there was silence, and I heard a voice saying, Shall mortal man be more just than God? Shall a man be more pure than his maker? Behold, he put no trust in his servants, and his angels he charged with folly. How much less in them that dwell in houses of clay, whose foundation is in the dust, which are crushed before the moth. They are destroyed from morning to evening. They perish forever without any regarding it. Doth not their excellency which is in them go away? They die, even without wisdom." May God add his blessing to the reading and to the hearing of his most holy word. We begin then our first cycle of conversations. Job has said his piece in chapter 3, and of course, as we heard, it was not a good word from Job. This was not his best hour. There is murmuring, there is complaining, there is a charging of God. There are things that Job, were he in a better state of mind, either would not have done, or would have repented of as soon as it was brought to his attention. Keep in mind also that this counsel from Eliphaz the Temanite, and while it has some good and evil mixed in with it, keep in mind also that there are times where we might speak the truth, and times where we might refrain from speaking the truth, all in uprightness. If you would take the time to read your larger catechism on the ninth commandment and the sins forbidden in the ninth commandment, a part of that is speaking the truth unseasonably or to the wrong end. How often have we heard someone say, "I've only said what's true"? May I say that that is no excuse. And so what we're going to see in Eliphaz's speech here, at least this first part, because he goes on into chapter 5, is that while there is some truth mingled in with some of the other things that he says, even the truth that he speaks is ill-timed and ill-placed. Eliphaz and his other friends, the other two friends along with him, will be brought into the Lord's condemnation at the end. So let us remember that because we've read the end, we have a little bit more insight into some of the things that Eliphaz says here. So after 7 days of silence, then Job is broken and he speaks, and then Eliphaz breaks his silence as well. And I don't know, maybe I'm reading a little too much into it, but even as he starts out, "If we essay to commune with thee, wilt thou be grieved? But who can withhold himself from speaking?" It is almost a confrontation at the front, isn't it? It seems that they're entering into this conversation with Job, perhaps even at the beginning, with a little bit too much confrontation. It is necessary to know our audience and to know to whom we speak and how we ought to speak. And it seems that Eliphaz here begins with his left foot, if you will, if I can use an idiom. So the first thing is, Eliphaz throws Job's own words back in his teeth, charging him with hypocrisy. This is a hard word for Job to hear. Eliphaz begins by charging Job with hypocrisy. Here's what he says. "You've strengthened weak hands. You've supported the feeble knees. You have instructed others in that wisely. And now, when it comes to you, you can't take it. When such things come upon you, when you have comforted others, now can you not comfort yourself?" Again, there may be an element of truth into what Eliphaz says here. But accusing Job of hypocrisy is perhaps, not the best place to start. So that's the first thing that Eliphaz does in calling upon Job to remember his own words. You know, the sauce that you've given to others, you have no taste for, in other words. Second, he reasons from the providence of God pertaining to Job that Job cannot be innocent. That there is something that he has done that has brought this judgment upon him. Notice what he says. "Even as I have seen," verse 7, "remember, I pray thee, whoever perished being innocent. Or, where were the righteous cut off?" Now, it's most likely that he's speaking about Job's children here, because he's speaking about their death. Right? "Job, come on, don't mourn so deeply over your children. Whoever perished being innocent." Well, that's a hard word. We might say in today's parlance, "Dude, that's cold." Right? Very cold. Okay, so "remember, I pray thee, whoever perished, even as I have seen, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same. At the blast of God they perish. By the breath of his nostrils they are consumed." And so now this also applies to Job in that he is suffering not just the loss of his children, but he's suffering such punishments, such chastisements, such difficulties and afflictions in his own body. And so now Eliphaz turns that accusation upon Job. And so he talks about the roaring of the lion, the voice of the fierce lion, the old lion. They all come to nothing. Even the young lion that gives birth to whelps. And here he's using lion not in a complimentary sense. We say lion, noble creature. No. He's saying lion as a rapacious, vicious creature that needs to be scattered. Okay, now, and then he moves on to verse 12. And in verse 12, it is a very interesting thing, and commentators are divided as to how they understand this. Is Eliphaz speaking literally of a vision of the night? Or is he simply adding credibility to what he's about to say? I tend toward the former. I tend to understanding that yes, he had received this as a kind of a night vision. Now a thing was secretly brought to me, and mine ear received a little thereof. In the thoughts from the visions of the night, when deep sleep falleth on men, fear came upon me, the spirit passed by me, the hair of my flesh stood up. And here's what he said. Shall mortal man be more just than God? Shall a man be more pure than his maker? Verse 17. As Job has in his speech shaken his fist against the providence of God and said such things as, why didn't my mother's womb become my tomb as well, and so on. There is perhaps some resonance in this criticism. But again, I think even every truth that is being spoken here by Eliphaz is being spoken in such an untoward fashion. It is being spoken in such an unseasonable fashion that Eliphaz is blameworthy. Is Job blameworthy? Yes. Yes. In a perfect world, and by the way, whenever we say in a perfect world, normally what follows is I'm excused for not being perfect. Okay. When the preacher says in a perfect world, what the preacher means by that is this is the standard. Okay, just so we're clear on that. In a perfect world, we can receive criticism by the worst of fellows, and we would still receive it if it's good criticism. Like David and Shimei. The Lord sent him to curse, let him curse. Right? Now, we're not often, sadly, grievously, that good. We're not often that upright in the way that we receive criticism. Now, I don't know exactly because we're not here to see the speech and the intonation. We know that Eliphaz is blameworthy, that the Lord will call him to account later for the way he has spoken to Job, that he's not given Job the benefit of the doubt, that he's not sought to sympathize with him. Instead, what he has sought to do is to add to his afflictions by heaping accusation upon him. Okay, so this is not a good example of what it means to be a godly counselor of one who is suffering. That doesn't mean that we must soft pedal the truth and that we must allow lies to take the fore. It doesn't mean that. But it does mean that the way that we speak one to another will be seasoned with grace. Eliphaz's words here are not seasoned with grace. He begins with accusing Job of hypocrisy. From there he descends to great sinfulness in his children and in himself. And then finally he accuses Job of the folly of charging God with foolishness, of being more righteous than God himself, which Job may have imbibed in the last chapter. However, Eliphaz has simply lost the credibility to bring that accusation because of the other accusations that he's brought against Job. So, what do we have here? Well, we have three accusations and three strikes on the part of Eliphaz. Now, Job is not guiltless either in this. The book is very clear. There's enough blame to go around. And as we especially go to the second round and then to the third round of conversations, we're going to find that pretty soon they just get tired of one another and they start telling each other to pipe down, to be quiet. Will there never be an end to words? They'll use sarcasm against one another. Job will finally say to him, I know that you are the people and wisdom will die with you. That is a very sarcastic thing to say. And yet, notice that while there is enough blame to go around, still, we must understand that Job is not guilty of the things that he's being accused of here. That Job still holds at least to some manner of faithfulness, even in the depths of his difficulty. And that his three friends have come from afar to mourn with him and to sympathize with him, but so far all they have done is they have exacerbated his suffering. And they will be called to account for that. Did Job charge God with folly? I think if we would study chapter 3 very carefully, I think we would see that that is probably a just charge. However, I'm not sure that the way Eliphaz addressed it is the way he ought to have addressed it. All right, thus ends the reading then of Job chapter 4. Let's continue praising God in the singing of psalms. Please stand with me and turn to Psalm 100.